Welcome to this brand new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. This podcast is hosted by Mark van Horek and myself, Elias Krum. We're both from Marketing Guys, a MarTech agency based out of the Netherlands. Today we have on the Marketing Technology Podcast, Kirsty Dawes. She is the CEO at Webbio. Welcome, Kirsty.
Hi, really nice to meet you, Elias, and speak to you on the podcast today, virtually. It's new times for us all, but really good to be able to connect and still share our thoughts and technology.
Great. It's an honor to have you, Kirsty. Times are changing, and some of the fortunate things that Corona bring is this whole virtual working. It's yep. Becoming the new normal. So for us, it's even the better, I would say. Of course, there are a lot of negative stuff about Corona, but this is one of the, at least in my opinion, very positive things about Corona. Start to work virtual, jump on an MS Teams or Zoom meeting quite easily. So, and here we are at the Marketing Technology Podcast. I have with me as well, virtually, of course, Mark. So Mark, welcome.
Hello everybody.
The co-host for the Marketing Technology Podcast. So Kirsty, we're going to talk about personalization and the way you think about personalization in this podcast. But yes. First of all, we and the listeners would like to learn a little bit about your background. So you are Kirsty Daw, and you're the CEO at Webbio. But what brought you to where you are now?
Sure. So, I mean, I will start off by saying I'm a marketer at heart. That is my love. And all the roles that I've done have all been involved in marketing in some way. Before I worked in my previous role, I was client side, both B2B and B2C roles. And I set up demand generation agency, really B2B, in 2009 and built that up. And we actually were acquired in 2017 by Central Media, who have businesses like eConsultancy, Marketing Week, Festival of Marketing, Oyster Catchers, et cetera, as part of their group, and stayed there for 2 years and continued to grow the business there. And then obviously had the opportunity at the beginning of this year to move to Webbio and take on the CEO role here. I would caveat that with I knew Webbio as MD of really B2B. I heard about their technology. I was excited about the technology because, again, my marketing background is very much around ROI and measurable marketing. And what I loved about the Webbio product is I could easily plug that into the client campaigns that we were running and, you know, measure the success that we were delivering, not just in terms of, you know, typical online metrics like bounce rate, dwell time, et cetera, but right the way through to conversion. So I just started selling it to our customers as part of my process, talking about it. It was my responsibility to do so because I thought it was exciting and it was going to add value to their campaigns. And so I already loved the product before I got approached to do this role. Know the CEO of the group very well. And so it seemed like a dream job for me to move on to onto a MarTech role away from agency. But I have to just round that back with saying, you know, whatever I do, marketing will always be a key part of it. And obviously I'm, you know, B2B marketer.
Great to have former agency owner on the show. It's you know, it's like the experience you've had there is so, I would say, valuable, and it really enables you to feel what marketers and agencies feel. And now you've made the move to a software vendor as Webbio. What does Webbio exactly do? Because Webbio, as you said, is part of a larger group. You might explain that a little, but what's the company structure like? What's the background, and what does Webbio do?
Sure. So Webbio is part of a group of businesses that incorporates a company called Lead Forensics that some of you may be aware of, and a new company called Web Insights, and also Webbio. At the heart of all of those businesses sits one of the, well, probably the world's most most effective IP database. So that IP database is what drives the solutions that we have within the group and is part of our proprietary IP. What Webio does is it harnesses that data to create personalized, relevant, bespoke experiences for B2B buyers from the very first time that they visit a company's website. Now, the reason that's powerful is, I think, threefold. I mean, first of all, as B2B buyers, we expect personalization now because we see it all the time in the consumer world. We go on to Amazon and the content that's served to us is relevant for us. It's helpful to us. We go into Netflix and the recommendations that are made for us are based on what we've bought before. So we expect that. The other point is that the website is such an important part of the buying journey that we make. You know, 71% of B2B buyers say it's the most important touch point when purchasing a solution. And then the third part is, as B2B marketers, we all know that personalization is very powerful. You know, the stats are there. You only have to look at Gartner's State of Personalization survey to see that personalization is being used to drive results. And we're using it across all of our channels. We're using it in email, social, direct mail, every outreach or touch point we have in an audience. But yet the website is the one place where we're probably not harnessing it as effectively as we could. We don't create a relevant experience for every single prospect from the first time that they visit us. We have to, or we think we have to, wait for them to share data in order to do that. Webio changes this because it actually takes advantage of the fact that in B2B, we don't have to wait for a prospect to share information about themselves before we start to give them a relevant experience. We can use IP data, we can use our own customer data and prospect data to build up a picture of that business before they hit the website, and then use that to create an experience for them in real time without them having to download any content, share any cookies. And that maximizes the experience they get from the very first communication and drives them through the funnel faster.
That's also one of the most interesting parts of the software that I've seen. So because I've become a fan of the software, I've seen it in practice. The thing that you're saying here is that the basically database with IP addresses that you have from your mother company or group company, Lead Forensics, and that makes the solution truly powerful and unique. Because Mark and I have talked to several personalization software vendors, and they can do all kind of cool stuff based on where people come from. Let's say someone comes from a Google ad and you show them something mm-hmm. different, or based on the weather, or you know, whatever, you can personalize that experience. But what you are doing basically is to make it very practical. You can just say, hey, that's a company XYZ, X number of employees in this industry. And we're going to direct them to this part of the website, or we're going to show them this specific landing content on the landing page. So that makes it truly powerful, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It gives us so many options to connect immediately and not have to wait for them to share data. So yeah, it's really exciting. And, you know, the results are there in terms of the uplift that it's giving to our clients. So, you know, we want to talk a lot about it.
Yeah, and it's like the other, and then you're also touching the other, let's say, very unique thing I think here is that it makes marketers, it makes it possible for marketers to adapt their website very easily towards their target audience or segments or whatsoever. So you don't actually need to dive into your CMS, which at larger companies, because you're also focusing on the mid-size and bigger enterprises, but those use like very specific and technical content management systems. And it's not always like an easy WordPress website, but it could be that you're using Sitecore or Drupal or whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And for marketers, it can be a drag to let's say, have a change on that website. And you would say as a marketer, hey, I want to test that button or that picture, et cetera. Yeah. And Webio basically makes it drag and drop as a marketer very easy to do that. So I've seen the tool in practice and I'm very impressed by it.
Yeah, that's it. It is, it's intuitive. And the editor that we've built is literally, it is, you know, it's drag and drop. So whatever you want to change on your website, whether that be you want to switch out images, switch out links, content, copy, even move CTAs from the top to the bottom of the page, do lots of testing, all of that you can do in the editor without any HTML coding. So for someone like me, who is a marketer who knows exactly what I want, but I don't want to get technical, it's great.
It is. So, and that's what I've heard from marketers as well. You know, they don't have to wait for IT to go through changes, get updates in their CMS, et cetera. You can test and do everything yourself. So I'm very impressed. So, so having said that, we're talking about personalization. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of personalization. You already mentioned a few. Personalization, it can also be done in email and in chatbots, and you can do personalized ads, of course. You are a lot in B2B. Can you, just for the listeners, say not only like a Webio story, because we're not trying to sell Webio here, but
no, sure.
What would be some use cases to explain the practical use of personalization?
Sure. So if we talk about it in relation to the website, that's probably, you know, because that's what we know in Webio. But again, you can do this with you know, any of the good personalization softwares. First of all, I'm going to split it down into two areas, because personalization isn't just about but if I think of the use cases for B2B website personalization, if we start with prospects first, I would break it down into probably six key types of personalization that our clients would use. So primarily from a personalization at scale perspective, sector vertical is obviously very powerful. So, you know, if you want to show a construction company that you understand their business, that you've worked with other companies in their sector, give them the content that they would need to make their decision faster, then that's a great way to harness personalization. And that's what a lot of our clients do and they start with. But then you also might want to create personalizations based on company size. So that could even either be revenue or employee numbers, because you might have a solution where the sales process is different. If you've got an SME client, you might want to take them straight through to online demo. If you're talking to a bigger enterprise business, you might want to take them through to their Salesforce and have a more detailed conversation with them. You also might want to show them different nuances within the product. So I think size-based personalization is also very relevant. From a location-based perspective, so I can give a good example here. So B2B marketing use Webio to create different versions of the website, both based on location and also based on industry. So they use the functionality to say, right, if they're in this location and they're in this industry, so they've got like those two personalizations running together, because they have a whole conference program that runs in the UK and a whole conference program that runs in the US that they don't want to have their buyers to have to go onto the website and find the relevant stuff for them. So again, they can pick that up using location and create a personalized experience for them there. At funnel stage, so clients have, you know, either through integration with CRM or through uploading their own data, or connection into MA platforms, for example, can create personalizations based on funnel stage. So again, you're not serving the same top of the funnel content for a prospect who's, you know, halfway through their buyer journey. You're actually saying, well, you know, I know this is what's going to be of interest to you now. And then channels, so where they came from, obviously is very relevant if you're looking at paid search and you've got particular search terms that they looked at before they came through. Again, you want to make sure that the content's relevant to that. So those are the use cases, and the way that we're supporting those use cases is allowing clients to change their website to support that. So that's through, you know, copy and content links. So what do we need to supply the client with? Like, what are the three pieces of content that we're going to put first on that homepage? Which video are we going to use that's going to be most relevant? Which white paper? Logos as proof points. So everybody wants to know they're in good company. So whether that be in terms of business size, like I'm an SME, I don't want to see, you know, 10 enterprise company logos, because then I'll think this is not right for me. Equally, if I'm in automotive, I want to see other automotive experience. So mm-hmm. that personalization provides reassurance, because there's a lot of anxiety around B2B buying, and we want to support them in that. Offers on the right products. So buyers want to see something that's been created especially for them. So again, saying this is something that you know, clients in automotive really valued. We can give you an introductory offer in this. Connection to the right team. So that can either be based on location or vertical expertise, you know, showing that the salesperson they should be speaking to, so we can connect them to the right areas and give them clearer proof points to support them in their journey. So if they came in via key search terms, again, making sure that the content that we're serving to them gives really good proof points and supports the reasons why they would choose you relevant to those. So that's cool. Prospect. So there's lots.
Yeah. And it's like the interesting things that you're mentioning here is that Webio or a personalization tool can be a very nice addition to your MarTech stack. Because if you're talking about MA or marketing automation, let's say you're using a Marketo or HubSpot or Acton or whatsoever, you could just connect the two and make the mm-hmm. two even stronger, right?
Exactly. And, so,
and it's like what you are also referring to is like when we're talking about marketing automation, we're talking about usually identified prospects. So the people that have downloaded something, the people that we know an email address from, but that's usually about 5 to 10% of all visitors. Yeah. And what you are basically doing is focusing on that other 90 to 95% and trying to give them the right experience.
Absolutely. Just because that, you know, everything's just getting busier. We're all fighting harder for every opportunity. And, you know, to show from the very first communication, I get you, this is what you need, and I'm going to help you to make the decisions that you need to make. That gives you, you know, huge standout and really will support the ability for you to be able to get that conversion or not. And, wow. You know, I wanted to just talk about the other thing, which is really important with personalization. I think, you know, marketers can also use that to support goals around growth of customer as well, because we're all switched onto ABM. We all know that we want to do more with ABM, and we can use ABM to create one-on-one personalizations for those clients. So say, for example, we're talking to a big financial services business and we're in pipeline with them. Again, we don't want them to go back to our site to check out some key data about us while we're in that sales process and then just see a generic experience. We can create a one-on-one experience for that business using personalization. And again, that's another use case that a lot of our clients are using, because not all of them have, you know, lots and lots of clients that they want to work with. They maybe have a finite amount of businesses that they want to support. So their personalization is not just at scale like we talked about there, but their personalization is at individual business level. And they're seeing great results, measurable results in terms of engagement. And because they're saying, I want to serve this personalization to this individual business, they're then able to measure and take that back to the board and go, look at the uplift in engagement we've had from that business because we created this experience for them.
Wow. It's like, but before we go to that, let's say ROI, because I'm very interested to hear more about that later on, because this is bringing you an ROI, which is really measurable. But before we go into that, listeners might wonder after hearing this story, you know, this whole personalization story using that software, etc. Is how much work is that? How much, because it sounds like you need to create all kinds of content, etc. So it could sound that it's going to take you three or four times more time as you're using now compared to let's say like one single website. And if you're personalizing it, well, it could, to me, you know, it seems like is this gonna cost a lot of time? What's your experience?
Yeah, so that's why it's really important for our customer success team to work with clients to understand priorities. So we've got a whole range of quick starts in place, because we all know, I've experienced it with buying MarTech myself, that we buy this and we have this period of like huge excitement, you know, we're gonna change the world, we've just invested in this, and
shiny objects.
Yeah, exactly. Then we realize, oh, actually, we need to put a lot of human effort into this to make it work. So in Webio, we recognize this and we support our clients in terms of quick start. So that might be a simple start with app company name personalization to get going. That literally takes 5 minutes. So you can start with that, so that again, when a company visits the website, you can talk to them. So that's really easy to do. And then your first industry-based personalization is really where we'd usually start a client. And you know, that's really probably the first time, it might take you a couple of hours. Once you're in the swing of things, it's very easy, because like I say, it's drag and drop. So you're literally switching elements out. You know, you can change your carousel, you can change the background image, you can change the CETA, you can pull in a link to a white paper, anything that already exists on the website, you can just drag and drop. So it is super simple, and we're continuing with the product to simplify that even more with the way we're developing the editor, because we know that's what will encourage continued use. But it's not going to take, what the point I wanted to make is, it's not going to take long to get success if you focus on the right elements first. So pick an industry where you know, actually, we've got really good story to tell here. This is really successful. We'd want more clients for ourselves in this area. Create your first personalization here, prove results there, and then you can move on to the rest. And you know, you can do that within, you know, the first day of having the tool. So you're already starting to deliver.
And the other thing that I've always learned with personalization is, in this personalization game, less is more. So you shouldn't want to personalize every little block or every little text on a website. So you should start by the small things, and the small things make the big differences. Also, from what I've seen, is like the more you want to change on a website, the complexer it's getting. So it's getting so complex that in the end, you know, you're creating so many possible different views of your website that no one oversees what's happening anymore. So you can automate a lot there, but less is more is our, at least, finding on this personalization game.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the other really important point that is probably useful to make, is that with all of our clients, when they're creating these at-scale personalizations, we always start off with one, and we always do a traffic split. So every client will get super excited and be like, I just want to personalize to everyone straight away. But when they need to prove to the board that this is successful for them, the only way they're going to be able to do that in a way that's statistically valid is if they do a split of traffic. So we'll take the personalization, and we'll serve that to 50% of the traffic, and 50% will, even though they're matched, get the current version of the website. So let's say they're targeting automotive. We want to make sure that 50% of the automotive traffic get personalization, 50% don't. And then we'll work with the client to understand, okay, how long do we need to leave that before we get statistical relevance? Because some clients have more traffic than others. If you have a lot of traffic, great, you're going to get to statistical relevance quite quickly. But if you don't have a lot of traffic, that's going to take a little longer. Once you've proven that, then you know what works, that becomes your control. And you can then take that format into your other verticals. And then you start to do your testing and your learning.
Well, that's leading us very nice into ROI, this little ROI discussion here, because especially in times with Corona, of course, where budgets are watched very carefully. My question there would be, when you're measuring ROI on this, which metrics should we measure and what's your experience there? So can you share some of the results on those KPIs?
No, absolutely. So in terms of measurement, key things we're looking at with a client are obviously the ones that are completely applicable to the digital marketer: bounce rate, page views, and dwell time on site. They're very easy for us to start to measure quite quickly. And we're typically, you know, seeing around like anything from a 30 to 50% reduction in bounce rates. Our average increase in dwell time is actually 90%. So that obviously is a big driver. But most importantly, we want clients to set up conversion goals in Webio so that they can prove true ROI, because those metrics are very difficult to take to, you know, a board or an FD and say, well, like, you know, great, our bounce rate is reduced by this point and loads more people are looking at the site. Well, you're still going to get that question. Well, okay, how much revenue has that delivered into the business? So what we're encouraging clients to do, and working with clients from the very start of the onboarding process, is setting up those conversion goals. And, you know, every client's different, but the conversion goals should really be around things like demo requests, contact form, downloading a price list, or perhaps a piece of content that's particularly valuable in terms of the sales process. And a client has the ability to set up as many goals as they want within the mix. And then we can work with them to show them the statistics that say, right, okay, now you've got those goals in place. Actually, the increase in leads you're getting based on that percentage uplift is this. And so over the next 12 months, that means you're going to get this many extra leads. And those are the conversations we're having with them. And we then want to understand, okay, so what's your current conversion on your web leads? How does that stack up then into actual sales revenue? So if it's, you know, 200 extra leads over a three-month period, how much revenue is that giving you? And we're helping clients by creating decision maker reports that they can use internally. So the FD, or, you know, probably the CEO, isn't super interested in bounce rates, but what he is interested, or she is interested in, is, you know, volume of extra leads and what those extra leads are worth in terms of pipeline to the business. So we're really supporting clients in getting those right from the off. And then we'll also help them with setting up other conversion goals that might be important to them. So things like, you know, they watched a demo video and they viewed a pricing page, they engaged with that key content, because again, that can support ROI by giving that information into sales. So saying, you know, these key prospects have looked at this from like an ABM perspective, for example. So it's really important to take a 360 degree view on it and not just be honed in on just the website metrics, but how does that translate right through to revenue?
Cool. So you're measuring the complete funnel there, basically. What I'm just wondering here is, When listeners are considering any kind of personalization tool, you with your agency background must have also spoken to lots of businesses that say, hey, we should personalize, because personalization also is like in this Gartner hype cycle, right? So everything should be personalized, etc. Mark, my co-host here, has an opinion, so he'll probably have some questions about that. I know for sure, but people are in this hype cycle and they read it and they say, oh, I should be personalizing. With your agency background, how would you advise marketers to start looking at personalization tools? Where should they start and how should they pick vendors?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think if you aren't, you know, you aren't on your personalization journey yet, you want to be able to work with a vendor who's going to support you to get results quickly. And that does, you know, I realize this is going, you know, this does fit feedback into Webby, but this is also coming from my agency background as well. Like, I need simplicity. I want to be able to have something that is intuitive for me as a marketer, that makes sense to me, has good UX, that I can go and I don't need coding for, I don't need support from IT for, I can just use it and I can publish and I can start to see the results. That's hugely important. And anything that massively impacts, you know, other functions within the business and that you'll need those functions to get started, I would say is a no, because you're only going to get 3 to 4 months in and you'll be frustrated because you haven't been able to prove any sort of ROI. I think, again, you know, try and find a solution that has like some quick start functionality in it, but do weigh up your own ability to support that process too. Like, think about, you know, can I invest a little bit of time in this at the start to get it right? Because it will be worth it. Look to vendors who can give you reporting that makes sense to not just you as a marketer, but also to C-level decision makers as well. So you want to be able to work with a vendor that will support you so that it's really easy for you to be able to prove that ROI. I think integration is important. You don't really want something that's completely standalone, because the more powerful our MarTech stack is, the better it will integrate. And so being able to get data from CRM or your own database or from an MA platform, I would say that's also really important. And please be careful that when you do look at something, you think about, am I going to use all of its functionality? Because there are lots of tools out there that do lots and lots of different things. But again, agency hat on here, the amount of clients that I go to see that, or I did go to see that had an MA platform and literally were using it just to send emails, or had, you know, like maybe an ABM platform and were just using it for one element of it. Such a frustrating waste of money, and it will only make you feel frustrated as a marketer. So don't go too big. Start off with something that you can harness quickly and get results from, and that you know you'll be able to use, because your team will only get frustrated when you don't get the full benefit.
Okay, so start with simple steps. Make it measurable. Make sure it fits in your MarTech stack. What leads me to a question here. What does your own MarTech stack look like at Webio? So what, you're growing pretty fast. You're almost like a startup and trying to conquer the world. What kinds of tools do you use yourself within your Webio MarTech stack?
Sure. So I would say it's not overcomplicated, because, you know, I think there is this whole issue, I'll have this and we'll have that. So we've kept it pretty smart and streamlined. If I start from the top, so data is incredibly important to us. So this is our own prospect data, the audience that we're reaching out to, because we've done a lot of work on product market fit and understanding, you know, who Webio is a great fit for in terms of verticals, size of business, etc. So we use Zoom data to build out and inform our prospect database, because we know marketers change job roles probably more than any other function within a business. So we have access to that for our own marketing efforts and also to support our sales team. From an MA perspective, we use HubSpot. And that really nicely integrates into Salesforce. So, we best practice is really important. We have some nice nurture journeys planned out for our audience streams. So that's, you know, new prospects, perhaps people that we've met at events, people who are further down the sales funnel. And We're also doing much more with our existing customers through HubSpot as well, and that all nicely fits into Salesforce. We do have live chat, and we use Zendesk for that. We actually don't have an... I think, you know, I'm getting more inclined to look at AI-based versions of live chat. Now I see some really nice solutions out there, but our live chat solution is, you know, manned by a team at the moment, and we use Zendesk for that. We also use a really cool tool called SimilarWeb, which for us is really important for prospecting, because it allows us to look at the prospects that we're targeting and see what traffic they're getting to their website. We can see bounce rates. We can see like what online activities they're investing in, whether that be paid search, whether that be online advertising. And then we can incorporate that into our marketing messages and our sales pitches. So that's a really cool database tool that we use that just helps us get better in the conversations that we're having with our audience. Of course, we use
Just out of curiosity, because you mentioned HubSpot there.
Yeah.
HubSpot has, and you're doing nurturing campaigns there for different kinds of segments within HubSpot. Mm-hmm. I'm not that familiar with HubSpot because I know HubSpot, but are you using any personalization in your emails there within HubSpot?
Yeah. Yeah.
How is that? Can you explain on it? Can you, I don't know if you're that much into it, of course, but you know, I would be interested in hearing how you use personalized email or personalized fields or personalized parts in the emails. How does that work?
Yeah. So for the most part, our emails are segmented in two ways. They're vertically segmented, and then they're also segmented by decision maker. So like we know if we're talking to say a SaaS business, they're going to be very switched on to driving online demos through the site. It's all going to be about conversion. So our messages should be different. Equally, let's say we're talking to a SaaS business, if we're talking to the CMO, she is going to be really interested in how is this going to drive business growth and revenue, opportunities, MQLs, SQLs, whereas when we're talking to a digital marketer, they're going to be much more interested in the more detailed metrics and how easy is this to use, because ultimately it's going to fall to me. You know, how could I quickly start to get results from that, and how would that fit with my own goals? So the messages that we're creating in our email campaigns are segmented in that way, industry vertical first and then decision maker second. So we're talking to people with the right messages, and we include, you know, some CEO level decision makers in some of our campaigns, because we know that personalization is relevant to them too, and again the message is quite different. Equally, if we're talking to, let's say, a business who's in digital transformation, they may not have thousands and thousands of prospects visiting their site. ABM might be the key focus for them in terms of personalization. So again, the message should be different. So that's why the vertical stuff is so important. And obviously referencing other clients that we worked with in their sector as proof points.
Okay, cool. Mark, I think you have some questions here. You're already, let's say, waiting to start asking your questions, I hear. So go ahead, Mark.
Well, it's this whole separated thing is also new for us, because usually Elias and I are just sitting next to each other, and then if I want to say something, I really pour it and it's I want to say something now. It's a little bit difficult, but nonetheless, I've been listening with a lot of interest. The thing that I'm interested in is it's about personalization. That's the whole red thread of this podcast. But very often, personalization is very focused on person, and if you use that person part from the personalization at a very early stage, it can become very creepy. Very often I say, well, it's not really about the personalization part. We use the term, but very often it's very much about relevance.
Yeah.
If you give me the information that I'm looking for, then you've got my attention. And the thing is, what I find so interesting in what you're doing, but also several other, is bridging the gap between what I call Google Analytics, mm-hmm. web statistics, and on the other side, the marketing automation, where we require an email address, and that's something personal. So yeah. There's such a huge gap, and I use metaphors. So I can imagine that if I'm in a do-it-yourself store and I go through the gate, usually a website, it's empty. You know, it's up, you know, go through the aisles and you'll find it if you're lucky.
Yeah, go search, yeah.
Yeah, and then you've got some solutions that somebody says, can I help you with that? Like the chat box and all that. And we've had somebody else on the podcast had smart cards and so. And it's like a personal assistance that can guide you. What do you want? So, mm-hmm. But this, what Webio has, is really, I enter the gate. And by the gate, we know, not me personally, but we know what kind of interest I have, so what kind of vertical, and the aisle comes straight to me.
Exactly.
How convenient is that? And another thing that I've noticed in this came in my mind, this kind of personalization or relevancy personalization, it gives you the first right impression of the right first impression. Mm-hmm. Because if I come on a website and I get the right content, what I'm looking for, I will have a straight away a good. So I'm very curious to know, can you see positive results? So it's that gap. You got that centerpiece.
Mm-hmm.
You see that the results, the conversions on when you do your marketing automation and other, that has improved significantly just yeah. because you've got this part between.
Yeah, no, absolutely. In fact, I'm going to bring up, I can see in front of the screen, the stats that I used in the B2B marketing conference on Wednesday when I talked. When our best results in personalization at the moment are where a client is really focused on what we're calling help me personalization. So that relevance. Because when they're like, say, picking a key vertical and saying, right, we're not just going to change one thing. We're not just going to say, you know, hey, marketing guys, welcome. We're going to actually show them, here's what we've done for other agencies who look like you. Here's, you know, the logos of those other agencies. Here's some really good content that you can use to inform you on your buyer journey. That the increase in on-site conversion is 448%. So it's significant. And I actually went back and checked this a number of times because I was like, you know, our guy Gary who pulls all the stats for us, I was like, are you sure it's that good? And it really is. But it is just making sure that it's helping the buyer on their journey. And this is not just me saying this. So Gartner did a really lovely piece on state of personalization last year, and they looked at the different types of personalization you can use and split it into two, which was, you know, there's the recognize me personalization, which is like, you know, hey Elias, thanks for coming back, and you know, you bought this, you know, and that's it. That's useful, but actually where a business focuses purely on that, the ROI is not good, is negative compared to where a business focuses on what we call help me personalization. And help me personalization, according to Gartner, so this is not just me, is 16% more commercially powerful. So those types of personalizations are things like make it easy for me, like make that message more straightforward so I can get through to the purchase or what I want. Make me less anxious about making the wrong decision. Give me a better idea about how I can use it. Teach me something new about how I can use that solution that makes me look good. Guide me to the product or service that's going to solve a problem for me and give me exclusive benefits. And I think we as marketers have a real responsibility to not just take personalization and almost be a little lazy with it and go, well, I'm just going to use that to like vomit bits and pieces that I know about my buyer. No, take that personalization and make that buyer's journey and their experience right for them. And I use this lovely, I have this story in mind, because you brought it into my mind when you were talking there of, you know, like 100 years ago, we would go into like a mom and pop shop, and the owner there would know our name, and they would know what brand of butter we liked, and they would know the names of our children, and they would bring the right stuff forward to us based on what they knew about us. If you go into a supermarket now, you're like literally walking around trying to find, it's like your hardware store, walking around trying to find what you want. Online, that's not the case anymore. You go onto Amazon and they bring forward to you, they recognize you, they bring that forward to you. As B2B marketers, we have to do exactly the same, because otherwise our buyers are just going to get frustrated because we're letting them down in terms of the experience we're creating for them. They get it as consumers. They need it here as B2B buyers too.
I really love the term help me personalization. Have you ever heard of Top Tasks from Gary McGovern?
No, I haven't.
You should yeah. Have a list, because it's from a different perspective. But what mm-hmm. he says is that people come for a purpose to your website. The days yeah. that you came for a website just to be awed by some flash intro page mm-hmm. are way long gone. People come for do their task.
Yeah.
And the website that helps the visitor to enable his task the best, they will get the results.
Yeah.
And I really think that help me personalization is something similar. It
Definitely.
Is helping you to do what you came for, and by providing them the content that they need, and then they don't have to go through, because we, even, what's his name, Steve Kruger said, don't make me think.
Exactly that, yeah.
These things are for ages, nothing has changed.
No.
But thank goodness technology is enabling to be more focused. Mm-hmm. And not doing all the, by being more focused, you will be focusing on the 20%. It's the Pareto, you know, 20% will have 80% of the impact. The 10x things instead of the 10% improvement. Yeah. All these kind of stuff. And these kind of find me personalization platforms, I really think they're going to make the difference. Because they will bridge between the Google Analytics. Okay, I got so many views and I got so many people and the bounces. But quite honestly, what does it say? Mm. Hardly anything. And then the other side, I have to know everything about you before I can do something personalized for you.
Yeah.
But I want to have a relationship. I do not trust. I don't know you. So I'm not going to give you that information. So I'm in the dark. So I really love that these kind of initiatives are coming along, because then we can do our work as marketers to provide the value that they're looking. But instead of, I have to know everything about you when that mm-hmm. becomes creepy, because I just want to get this stuff and I want to have this result. And this is really helping from the visitor, from the customer point of view, and becoming more customer centric instead of being more organization centric.
Yeah, 100%.
So yeah, well, you got a fan.
I was going to say, I don't know if you've read, one of my favorites is a book by a guy called Jay Bayer called Utility. And he talks about the fact that if you sell to a customer, you have a customer today, but if you have a customer, you have a customer for life. Yes. And, you know, if you think about, you know, there's the whole customer experience benefit in there from the very first communication. These guys get me, they help me, they save me time, they made things easy for me. Already you're ahead of the game before you've even engaged.
Yes, absolutely. So that's why I love this so much, because a lot of people are talking, like Jeremy McGovern and Jay Bear, and so on, they got the point. But how can we, ordinary marketers, can actually do this? And if all our tools are very much geared to the end of the thing, getting the sale, and it's very much focused on that part, then you're alienating yourself from a huge potential. And now, thank goodness, with solutions like you have, we can shift much more to their side.
Yeah.
And be much more of help. Therefore, I was very curious to know, and I'm glad to hear that it is has a significant impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because then at the end goal, the companies help, but the customers also help. And so absolutely, these two are aligned. That's good.
Yeah, it really does work.
Yeah, so absolutely. So, you know, I've been listening to the questions of Mark and your answers, Kirsty. And, you know, I'm intrigued by what it brings for customers. To me, a question pops up like, do you even need an ROI? Because this is so obvious. And, you know, I've spoken to some people before that said like, yeah, of course you need personalization because people expect you to help them in a correct way. So you can talk about ROI lots of times, but you know, in the end, if you're not doing it, you're just disqualified as a vendor. So that's the other side of the medal there. So, you know, very interesting. You know, it was a pleasure having you on the show. Is there something I forgot to ask you or something you would like to share to the audience as a...
No. I mean, I would kind of echo what you just said, actually. I mean, and of course I would say this because I'm hugely passionate about personalization. This is why I do the job I do and I'm a marketer. Mm-hmm. But I do see it as a hygiene factor. I think, you know, we have got a duty to our B2B buyers to make their lives easier through personalization. But, you know, making it measurable makes it even more powerful and it ensures that, you know, we as marketers can keep the tech that we want to drive the results that we want.
Absolutely. So thank you for being on the show, Kirsty. I'll share your LinkedIn profile, of course, and the links to the to your website and some of the other names and books that were mentioned by Mark and you. We'll just drop those in the show notes and for people so they will find you and they can connect to you on LinkedIn. So thank you very much, Kirsty.
Thank you. Lovely to speak to you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe to our channel. Also, if you would like to be a guest on the show or if you know anyone that should be a guest to our show, drop me an email through e.crum@marketingguys.nl or take a look at the website marketingguys.com. Thanks for listening.